What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Dive Bomb Squadcast, episode 85 coming at you. I'm your host, Matt Judy, and today we have one of the best retriever trainers in the Pacific Northwest, and he also trained my dog, Drifter. We have Colin Ching of Cascade Retrievers on with us today. How we doing, Colin?
Doing pretty good, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for taking the time to come on. I'm sure you're getting pretty busy, dude. I'm sure.
Yeah, we're fighting the daylight every day, but we're getting.
I was gonna say, you said you get done training dogs about 7:30. I'm like, dude, you got to be running out of daylight now in October. It gets dark at like 6:50 now.
I know it. We're going to that last light and beyond. Sometimes. Yeah,
that's got to be. Do you do like any indoor training when you run out of light or not?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm saving a lot of basic training, like obedience, all that new stuff for dogs just coming in. We're saving that for when the lights are on.
Gotcha. Yeah, I could see that. How many dogs do you have right now? A full load?
Yeah, we got a full load. We just sent two home. They finished up this week and waiting for two more to come in at the end of this week.
Nice. Heck yeah, dude. Well, Colin, I kind of just wanted to start out and kind of just get the history of Colin and how all of this started for you from like the very beginning and it turning into this business of Cascade Retrievers right now. And I mean, you have an awesome training facility and just kind of from the beginning of how it all started.
Yeah, I mean, I probably started like most people, pretty dedicated waterfowler. Then I had a family expanded. Got pulled in a couple different directions, but, you know, was a hardcore duck hunter. Had some great folks doing that. Finally decided, it's time to get my own dog. And once I started kind of looking into that and reading up about that, that kind of really got the bug for me. And I just kind of ran with it. I went crazy. I got my first dog. I probably researched for like a year and a half before I even got him.
Dang.
Talked to everyone I could, read every book I could get my hands on, and just went crazy with that dog. I ended up having a pro help me train that dog, self-train that dog, and he went on to be just an incredible dog, won every competition, you know, has lots of accolades, ran it at national events, and I hunted the heck out of that guy, and he really showed me what was really possible with the dog. Probably learned more from him than anybody else. But that kind of evolved, and you know, I got pretty serious about the training, and as you know, I grew with that. My skill also grew, and I ended up working for a pro for a time. That kind of gave me the inside track onto what it's like to actually have a business, have a kennel. Yeah. A lot of dog training is not just being able to train the dogs. A lot of that is being able to interact with people, you know, make sure you're have a lot of honesty and integrity in what you do. And making yourself available to folks when they need more information. So,
yeah, for sure. How long has Cascade Retrievers been around?
Oh gosh, I want to say probably 7 years is when I probably started it 7 years ago. Damn. I mean, I've been training for probably close to 10, but you know, there's this kind of this point where you're doing it on the side, and then you're like, well, you know what? I really need to make a business out of this.
Yeah,
I need
exactly.
to start paying taxes and all that.
The fun stuff of being a business owner. I feel it with my own dog kennel
that I have. Yeah. So I've probably been training dogs now for about 10 years and it's really, I feel like every year it just grows and grows. I get to this point where I think, man, it can't really get much bigger. And then the next year we end up building more kennels or adding more dogs or more kids working for me.
Exactly. Just,
lots of stuff going on.
Dang. Yeah, I was curious if you expanded or not, or if you just kept it at like a certain number of dogs, or if you ever considered expanding if, you know, the demand was there. I remember when I got Drifter as a puppy, you know, I was asking around and you were one of the most recommended people like in the entire state, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's always it seems like every year I'm adding new slots, adding more dogs onto the truck. There is a fine line between too many. And I definitely want to maintain my quality and make sure that I'm turning out dogs that, you know, whether that's your average Joe hunter or somebody who's going to go and run national tests with me, I want to make sure I'm doing a good job.
Yeah, exactly. So in your training, you have different stages of training, or how would you explain that to somebody?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of the terminology we use is very similar to what we do in the testing arena.
Yeah.
You kind of have your beginning dogs. They're just doing the basics. We call that a started dog. You have an intermediate level where dogs are starting to learn to run blind retrieves. Blind retrieve is just simulating a bird the dog didn't see fall. And you're given hand casts and whistle directions to get them to that bird. And they're doing that kind of at an intermediate level. More advanced training would be, multiple marks going down at one time.
Yeah.
Learning some training aspects and concepts relating to like not avoiding water or not avoiding cover to get on their way to the bird. A dog will typically run mark much better if they run straight at something. And the terminology I use is like they take a picture of where that bird fell, and are they just zooming in as they're running towards it, or are they having to like scoot all around and come at it from a different perspective?
Yeah.
So usually we try to teach them to run straight if we can.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I did just the started one with Drifter, and he just turned out, great coming out of there. Last year was his first season and he did great. He was super steady. He only broke once on his first hunt, and after that he never broke again, and marked everything really well. And it's funny, he started, I gotta know, is this frowned upon in the dog world if a dog will pick up two birds at once or not?
I mean, it is for testing. It certainly is. Like I gotta put this out there, if there's any dog trainers listening,
yeah,
I didn't teach Drifter to pick up two birds.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, dude, that was all himself. Exactly. Yes. So I was like, I don't feel like that's a good thing in the dog.
I mean, it's kind of nice if you're trying to get them up quick and you got birds working and you got to get the birds out. But yeah, generally frowned upon. It's not a huge deal when you're out hunting. It's just something you don't want to encourage for a test dog.
Exactly. That's what I would think. So I kind of want to dive into that too. So you have, like your basic hunting dogs and your test dogs. Is there different levels in that too? There's got to be just like a whole different like world to them. I mean,
there's multiple venues or venues where you're going to test to a standard. If you meet that standard that day, your dog will get a pass, will get a ribbon, and they will accumulate passes. And once they get a certain amount of passes, they'll get a title.
Yeah.
There are other venues where you're in a strict competition and only one dog is going to go home with the first place. And there could be 150 dogs in that test, but only one dog's going to win. And they're going to throw some tough stuff at you. Way beyond, kind of the things that you would encounter hunting. It really becomes just a competition of what can this amazing animal do and what can I teach him to do?
Yeah, I'm pretty green in the dog world. Like I've told this to the listeners before, like I was not a dog guy at all until my wife got a golden retriever like 3 years ago. And then after that, I got Drifter as a puppy. And now I'm like own a dog kennel, a boarding kennel. I'm like, dude, how did this happen? Like I'm just dogs are around all the time now. And I hated dogs 5 years ago. It's pretty crazy. So it's cool to learn about all this stuff. One thing I kind of want to dive into, right out the gate is just kind of like beginner 101 tips for your like average hunter that gets a puppy. So I'd say like on picking puppies and, beginner tips from like the ground up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like in anything, I think the better consumer you are, the better dog you're going to end up getting. Like you really want to try to stack the deck in your favor, and you can and should call multiple people, talk to as many people as you can. You can get really lucky and get a dog off of Craigslist for really cheap. And that dog might turn out awesome. That might be your once in a lifetime dog, but it's so easy now with the DNA testing and just all the health checks you can have done to really ensure that you're going to have a healthy dog that's going to, stand up to the rigors of hunting back-to-back days for prolonged periods of time and also be genetically sound, because there's some really bad, nasty diseases out there that are really, really preventable by just like a cheek swab. You can send in their DNA, have all the tests run, and you can be sure 100% that your dog's not going to have those So I always really recommend, no matter what breed of dog you are looking into, whether that's a golden retriever, labs, Chesapeake Bay retriever, Boykin Spaniel, there's a website called OFA.org. And OFA is just the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals. And you can search by breed there what health checks they recommend you have done on your dog. And that's always a great way to kind of weed out your not so serious breeders, because there's really no reason that you shouldn't, that your dog should ever be affected by some of those genetic diseases that are out there if you're dealing with a responsible breeder. So really looking into health checks is kind of your first step. Second step is, you know, of course, it's always great to be able to see your the parents of the litter of puppies that you have, see how they work. You know, your average hunter may not really care about the titles and stuff that dogs accrue, but the titles tell you a lot about the potential of the puppies that you're going to have. If mom and dad were able to be trained to a really high level, that tells you something about that their offspring are also likely to have those traits. They're going to have the drive that you really want to see. Hopefully they'll have an off switch for you in the house. Sometimes that takes a few years to kick in. When you get a real hard going dog, those are kind of the general things to take a look at. I mean, I would say Orthopedic Foundation for Animals is a really great resource. It's free. They're like a nonprofit. They're just out there trying to make sure that people are getting and breeding healthy dogs. So that's a really good place to start. What else was there? So that's kind of like picking a puppy. I mean, once you bring home your puppy, you know, I kind of always use the analogy of like, if you teach your dog anything, like it could be to roll over, it could be to pick up your slippers and bring them to you, get a beer out of the fridge for you, whatever. If you spend 5 to 10 minutes a night with your little puppy and you just try to work on something, that you will reap the benefits of those, that time spent for that dog's life, because just teaching them how to learn, how to take in information that you're trying to communicate something when you speak to them really makes dog training easier. You know, I get a, you know, I run the gamut of dogs that come to me. Some are amazing right out of the gate. Some like Drifter are, you know, already know how to retrieve. They, you know, Drifter's like a brick house. He'll run through a house to get a brick on the other side. But sometimes you get dogs that don't have much. They haven't learned how to learn yet. And that like 5 to 10 minutes every night, whether that's like treat training or clicker training, whatever. You know, tickles your fancy, but just trying to teach them something will generate a dog that is just a lot smarter, learn a lot quicker, a lot easier, be a lot easier to train when they get older.
Gotcha.
I would say for those self-trainers out there, you really, there's a lot of programs out there. And in general, my recommendation is always trying to pick a program that you can get some help with, because I don't know, I'm not really a great book learner, but if you can go and talk to somebody at one of the clubs, one of your local clubs, and get some help, and them kind of have an idea of what program you're using, that's a really beneficial thing to be able to have somebody that maybe is trained 3 or 4 dogs as an amateur and they're willing to help you out because you're really into the same stuff as them. That's a really great resource. And so that kind of leads me into, you know, if you're going to train a dog yourself, there's a lot of clubs, not just for here, us locally, but nationally across the country. There are a lot of HRC clubs, hunting retriever clubs, and AKC clubs as well, that have club training days like once a month. They're just a bunch of dudes and gals getting together. They love to duck hunt. They love to train their dog and they get together in the off season and they just share information and try to make their dogs as good as they can. So that's a really good resource. So when you are looking at all the different programs that are out there, you kind of want to pick one that is a little more mainstream and that most retriever trainers are using. That way you can talk to people on the same level. You're not talking from different books.
Yeah, exactly. I could see that being a massive resource. And like when I got Drifter as a puppy, I was like, man, do I want to try to self-train him or I just want to send him off? And then it was funny because lots of people will be like, oh, you just get a robot dog back or whatever if you send them off. I don't know if you've heard that. Like, oh, you just get a robot dog. I was like, I don't think so. Like, it's still the same dog. Like, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, he might listen to everybody that tells him a command, but that's not a robot dog, in my opinion, you know?
Sure. I mean, they definitely, you know, people always worry that when they send their dog off to training, their dog's going to forget them. And they do not at all. They may not expect you that first time they see you because they're so used to getting off the trailer and going to work.
Yeah.
And they're excited for the duck. But that first time, they definitely remember you. I mean, you know, you kind of want a robot dog, to be honest.
That's what
you
I
want
was
a dog that's
going to
listen. Like you, not that they come out as robots, but I mean, you want that will have a predictable response to correction and a predictable response to a bird being shot. And that's, hey, can I go yet? You want them to ask that question.
Yeah.
And instead of just boom, gone. And they're out there doing their own thing. So, you know, different strokes for different folks, but I think training is definitely going to lead you down a path of having a better appreciation for your dog and open a lot of doors that, you know, probably where you couldn't trust your dog before to always come back.
Yeah.
Now you can trust them to come back. And that's a pretty big deal when you're out hunting. I mean, I don't know how many stories I've heard about dogs getting lost in the fog out on the bay and, you know, fog rolls in, they shoot a cripple, send the dog, and that sucker's not as crippled as they thought. And he's flapping across the top of the water out into the fog.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fido just won't get called off and you have no way to get him back. And you might, you know, you might have a boat handy, but you might just be hunting from shore.
Exactly.
And then you're just spending the whole hunt, well, that whole day is just looking and praying for your dog to show up. So there's some, you know, important aspects to training, not just, you know, having a fancy dog and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have like a, what would be like the perfect dog to get brought to you, in your opinion, for training?
I mean, you know, some things that I would look for are like dogs that are really amped up to retrieve. They, you know, that it's not, some dogs, it's a game that's just born into them. They just out of the box, no matter what, without any kind of practice or training, you throw something, they're going to go pick it up and get it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you have a dog that just hasn't been thrown for. And the main thing you want to have when the dog comes in is I want to see a lot of drive to retrieve. A dog with a lot of drive that really loves to retrieve, you know, that's a dog I can for sure train. You bring me a dog that's maybe a little wishy-washy, doesn't, you know, only likes to, you know, go out and get it once. And then after that, they're, you know, smelling around, eating grass. That's a little bit tougher, but that's a skill that you can nurture in your dog by, you know, spending a couple minutes every night, getting them crazy, having a good time, getting them crazy to retrieve. That's a really important, probably the most important. The other things are, you know, as we talked about earlier, but teaching your dog to learn how to learn is a really great way to speed that process along. Those are kind of the really the big ones. Everything else, you know, we can teach.
Yeah. And like you were telling me, some dogs learn faster, some dogs learn slower. It kind of just goes with how they are. Like Drifter, for example, I remember you saying obedience for him took a lot longer than like the field work and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, the field work went really quickly. I mean, he was just a naturally talented dog. He was naturally like watching what fell out of the sky just through instinct. And he went really hard for that stuff, whatever you were throwing. All that obedience stuff, you know, whether it takes you 4 weeks or 8 weeks, it's all going to get done. It's just a matter of repetition sometimes. Sometimes you got to hit them over the head with just repetition over and over until they get it. You know, that's nothing wrong. That doesn't mean that they're a bad dog. Doesn't mean they're not talented. Yeah. It just means that's how they had to learn in the beginning. And you just had to repeat it quite a bit.
So repetition. So when you're trying to teach a dog like something new, when do you feel fully confident that like they know and will remember it? For like anything, is it like they can do it 5 times in a row or remember it a couple days in a row? What would be your thoughts on that?
I mean, I would say, you know, the more they do it and the longer they do it, the longer that those skills will stay intact. So just like anything, you know, I had a 5-year-old dog in training that I just finished up this month. And, you know, he took a little bit longer, maybe instead of 3.5 months, he was like 4.5 months or something of training.
Yeah.
But he also had 5 years of kind of bad habits ingrained in him.
That's true.
From getting away with not retrieving the right way, not delivering to hand. So he had a lot of, you know, those stuck around a little bit longer. But as we started to replace those and he got some more repetitions in doing it the right way, and then through some instruction with his owner, they're going to hopefully continue that through this next hunting season. And he's just going to have all new habits. So every skill is like, you know, going to lose some accuracy as you distance yourself from consistent training. You know, when a dog's and they're going 5 days a week, every week, that's quite a bit of practice. And so it takes a little while for that to wear off, but you know, you bust them out and go do some practice every now and then. It's pretty easy to keep those skills intact as long as you know how to help uphold that standard.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's what I did. Well, I keep using Drifter as an example because he's my dog and you trained him. So, like with him, every day I do heel, here, sit, kennel, like every single day we go through the motions and throw him at least like 3 bumpers. And that is like every day I just haven't let up on him because in my opinion, I don't want him to lose that training. I don't think he would, but I don't want him to get rusty on it either. You know, so it's easy for me to take, it only takes like maybe 10 minutes a day or 15. It doesn't take long at all to just, or if I'm walking him to his kennel, I make sure he's healing or here, I'll stop and make him sit and follow me. I think it's just those, you know, those daily repetitions that keep him pretty dialed. And for the listeners, I brought Drifter to a mock hunt that Colin puts on, which is really sweet to get your dog dialed. And he did pretty good there. Like I felt like I had kept up on him enough where he just like was like ready to go for the season.
He was looking sharp. I mean, he was retrieving well, snappy with his commands. I mean, he was steady. You know, we were, you know, that I think we shot over 100 pigeons that day for all the dogs.
It's crazy.
There was quite a pile of carnage at the end, but I mean, we had a good time, but he also did really well. I mean, it's nice to see him come back and see that you've maintained his skills. And, you know, if anything, he's probably gotten a little better with some experience.
Yeah, 100%. Because he went through his first season and he got almost 300 retrieves on his first season, which was awesome. And most of them were great. But I could tell he remembered your training grounds because when I brought him out of that kennel, dude, he started going ballistic, like just going. Cause he's an amped up dog. Like he's on 100, like all the time. And when he got there, his just high head, ears up, and he was watching every duck get thrown for other dogs. And he wanted into that pond so damn bad, dude. I was like, where did this come from? He definitely remembered that place like 100%, which I thought was hilarious.
Nice.
But that mock hunt you put on was awesome. How long have you been doing that?
I mean, in some form, ever since I had my first dog. I mean, that first season, I was getting ready. I had a buddy, good buddy that I hunt with, and he has a dog. And so we were like, man, I don't know what your dog's going to do with my dog when we're hunting. And so we kind of set up our own little 2-man mock hunt and kind of went through that. And, you know, I kind of just been doing that ever since, every year before the season. And then, you know, once we started having, you know, I started sending dogs home. Sometimes I might send those dogs home in February and they got to wait, you know, 9 months until the season rolls around. Exactly. And I'm like, man, I don't know how this is going to go if they don't, you know, stay on top of this. So, you know, it's just a really good opportunity for folks to get out there, you know, knock the dust off of the dog, off of you, you know, finding all that gear. A lot of times just mentally, especially for somebody who's just going out with their dog the first time, maybe they haven't hunted before or they haven't hunted with a dog. You got to think about like, oh man, I'm going to have my call around my neck and my whistle and my e-collar, which, you know, where am I going to put that? And like, oh man, if I'm going to lay out, I'm going to have to hold a gun in one hand. And, you know, what am I going to do my e-collar in the other one? How am I going to pull my decoy dancer? You know, how am I going to get stuff going? So those are all things to be. That it kind of gets your mind going about like what's really going to happen out there when you're hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty fun now because I have the resources to really, you know, put out I don't know how many decoys. I was maybe 500 decoys or something, but like way more than we do when we're training. But like when you go snow goose hunting, I mean, there's probably like 10 times that out there.
Exactly. And, big spreads. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you oftentimes you forget about until you go out on that first hunt. It's like you have a pull string decoy. You know, we can't use mechanical decoys out here. And, you know, you cut that dog loose and bam, he cuts across a spread and there goes your string. And you're like, man, I forgot to lift it up. And you know, those are always things that it's like good to get back in your mind so you can kind of work out some of the details that you're going to have when you go out there and start killing some ducks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to just kind of, like you said, knock the dust off and just get ready for it. I mean, our season's going right now. I probably won't hunt until November 1st, I don't think. But it's that time, dude. And it's just, it was cool to go out there and get some. You know, at my house, I have pretty good, I wouldn't say training grounds, but I have big open pastures and I have a creek that runs through my property so I can run them through water and I can run them on these pretty long retrieves and I have big brushy stuff. I can throw it in there and make them search for it. I can throw it across the creek so I can do all kinds of stuff, you know, with drifter at home. But maybe for people who don't have access to that stuff or, you know, can come out to your grounds and get a little bit of that experience is really nice to have. And shooting those pigeons was pretty fun too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my setup for my mock hunt is really, kind of biased. Cause I'm like, I much prefer to hunt in a field, dry field than I do sitting on a pond or putting on waders. I probably have turned down more hunts to where I had to put on waders than anyone alive, but because I really don't like putting on waders. I'm a big field hunter, or at least I was a big field hunter when I wasn't training dogs every day.
Yeah,
but like that's the kind of grind that I like to do when I did hunt. And you know that kind of leads me back to maybe one of the tips for people training their own dog is, you know, teaching your dog to use a dog blind or a mud hut is really just an incredible skill to have for hunting and just having a dog. When you're out hunting and you have them have their own little place, that really gives them like an idea of what the boundaries are pretty crystal clear about, like, either I'm in it or I'm out of it. And when I'm out of it, when I wasn't sent, I could get in trouble. Really helps with keeping your dog steady. It's also, you know, when you have a young dog, you don't want to tuck that sucker in your layout blind, or you don't want to tuck him, you know, sit him next to you on the bench where he can't see anything. You want to put that dog in the best position so that he's going to see those birds fall. Cause in the beginning, no matter how much training he's had, nobody can replicate a bird, you know, coming in, circling and getting knocked out of the sky. Cause they just never seen that. But if they're sitting in a great place where they can see the field, they're going to have a lot more opportunity to connect the dots really quickly that, hey, those suckers up in the sky there, that's where we're actually going for. And those are ducks.
Yeah. The whole purpose of it.
Yeah. They're not looking for the kid on the quad, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm really a big advocate for teaching your dog to use a dog blind. That just kind of came about from out of necessity and hunting the potato fields. Like, I mean, you're trying to lay out in a muddy field on like a little sheet water pond, like
brutal.
Yeah. Your layout's dug into a little puddle. It's just accumulating water that you're laying in. And it's really hard to hide a dog out there. So I taught my dog, that first dog, to return to the dog blind no matter where it was. And so we'd, you know, set up our spread around a little piece of sheet water or whatever for a widgeon hunt. And you know, I'd stash the dog, you know, 75 yards behind me on the fence line where he could actually get brushed in and hide. And because he was real reliable, we were able to just bang away. And then, oh yeah, I think we're good. No more birds coming. I don't see any. All right. Cut the dog loose, yell his name, zip out, get the birds, bring them to me, turn them around, send them back to the fence line. And you get, you know, I mean, that was a big part too of getting a dog in the beginning, was like you chase a cripple through the potato fields and you get your boots sucked off. And
my gosh, it's so nasty.
That's no fun. And then you're all sweating. You're just like, oh man, that's brutal.
Oh yeah. We know how that goes. You're trudging through shin deep mud and Like you said, I've lost multiple boots out in a spud field, and it just ruins your day immediately.
Yeah. And so then when you have a dog, you can send to go get a bird, yeah, you know, as far nice. As you can see, that's when it really like hits you. Oh man, this was so worth it. Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. I thought it was funny. I was hunting a spud field, like kind of on the edge of a spud field along a ditch, and I had Drifter in his dog blind, or had my dog blind next to my layout, and he charges those things so damn hard that he hit the back of it and it launched the whole thing back into the ditch with him still in the blind, dude. I wish I had a video of it. I was laughing my ass off. I was like, hey, you don't got to charge that thing so damn hard. He flew himself into like a 3-foot ditch behind him.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, dang.
That's really the cool thing about that dog blind thing is they really start to realize, like, when I'm in there, I get ducks.
Yeah, exactly.
So they want to get in there.
Oh, yeah. They love getting in. Like, when I give him that kennel command, he's like, boom, immediately.
Yeah.
Runs right to it. Yeah, and I'm sure they associate that to, you know, their job. And I think it's been awesome. Like, I haven't hunted him. I think he'd do fine, but I haven't hunted him out. Like, when I've hunted, he's been in a dog blind the whole time. I've never been on like a permanent blind or an A-frame with him yet, but I'm sure he'd do fine.
Yeah. I mean, usually that's going to transfer pretty well. If you can run him a little bit away from you,
yeah,
that distance is always going to create a little static in the communication. So if he's pretty solid when you're doing that, I mean, usually that's going to translate.
Yeah. True. So if you have a dog that breaks, what would be your number one tip to help stop that and make them more steady?
I mean, if you're in the throes of the hunting season and you're not about to go start, you know, quit hunting and start training every day, I would say just restrain them. You know, there's some really good products out there where you can stake them out and you have like a quick release.
Yeah.
Like, what's his name? Alex Langbell makes a pretty cool one. He's got like the leash, and then it's got a little 550 paracord off to the side.
Oh yeah,
and
he's got the quick release on.
Yeah, you just crack that 550 and bam, it cuts them loose. But they're secure until you pull that. So that's kind of a really good way. I mean, I've been really fortunate. I've never seen a dog get shot, but I always hear the horror stories about that you might be hunting 10 guys down the line in layouts and your dog cuts across and the first three guys see it. But the fourth guy doesn't see it, and you hit a dog with a shotgun at close range, it's not pretty. You're going to quit. You might never get a dog again. You might never hunt again if you do that to your own dog. It's
traumatic, yeah.
So, I mean, that's, you know, a pretty cheap and easy way to make sure your dog quits breaking. I mean, if you're going to go out and train, the easiest way is just hold them. Is just put a little restraint on them and physically make sure that if they're going to go, you just tell them to sit and you pull back on their little tab or their little collar that they got. And, you know, eventually through repetition, they just realize, well, he's not going to let me go until I sit down and be quiet. And pretty soon they start learning, you know, kind of like getting in the dog blind generates ducks, or the mud hut generates ducks. Well, me sitting down and being quiet also generates ducks. So that's, you know, the easiest way. As you start to, you know, train a dog more, there's, you know, you obviously would start to correct that. And as you get into like test dogs and stuff, you're going to almost bait them to do that. So you can make them a lot more reliable because you're going to see a bunch of different scenarios in a test that maybe you're not going to see out while you're hunting.
That's true. Yeah, I only had, I think Drifter only broke once, and it was on his very first hunt, and he was so damn amped up to go get a duck that he just like barreled out of there. But then I corrected him, and then he never did it again. Like, I have full confidence in him that he's so steady that he will not break now. So it's nice to be, you know, confident in your own dog like that, where you can put him in a blind anywhere, knowing that, you know, they'll just be steady, super steady, and just stay there. Cause I mean, that's a huge complaint in the hunting world, is breaking dogs. And, you know, you see all these videos of people just starting to rip and their dogs got 50 yards down the decoys already.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's something to, you know, really put into your dog, is being steady, I would think.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you always hear like, oh, you know, I don't need a fancy field trial champion or something in my dog, but you know, when you're out hunting, the stakes are real, and you make a mistake out there and it might cost you dearly. And that's always a good thing to keep in mind when, you know, you're thinking about, you know, whether you should do some training or not. You know, worst thing that happens at a test is, well, I didn't win a ribbon this weekend. Yeah. I'm going to have to come back next weekend. But you make a bad mistake out with your dog, or your dog makes a bad mistake, or, you know, won't come back and is headed, you know, chasing that cripple across the road, and there's a truck coming and you can't stop them. That's a horrible feeling, you know, where
absolutely,
you see it coming and you can't do anything about it. But if they had some training, you'd be able to do something there.
100%. Do you still have like deer dogs today? Are they from the genetics of the first dog you've ever had, or did you stray away from that?
I mean, I've dabbled everywhere, but the current two dogs that I have are out of a breeding of my original dog. He was really exceptional for me.
Yeah.
And he was bred quite a bit because of that. So I've got a grand pup of his in training right now too.
Dang. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
What do you think like the weirdest or most uncommon dog you've trained is?
Oh boy. I would say like that you don't see a lot is a flat coated retriever. And if you've never seen one, they're kind of like a tall, lanky, golden retriever, but with black or brown fur.
Dang. Yeah, I've never even heard of one of those.
Yeah. They're just a little different. I mean, they usually have pretty good drive to retrieve.
Yeah.
But they're an interesting dog. I just finished up a Boykin Spaniel last week, and that's like originally the state dog of Georgia, but they're a pretty younger breed.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like a small spaniel that's brown. Kind of looks like a brown cocker spaniel.
That's pretty sweet. I think there was one at the mock hunt when I was there.
Yeah, there was at least one.
Yeah, there was one of them. I was like, dang, what's that little guy doing here? That was sweet.
I mean, they get going pretty hard too.
Yeah.
And they have those big flappy ears and they're just like flapping in the wind as they're running.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny to see them go through taller grass because they don't just run through it. They kind of like deer just bound like
wing through it.
Yeah. They boykin their way through it.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. I was like, what the heck? But I know a lot of the guys in the South, I don't know where in the South, but there's a lot of guys in the South that'll hunt those dogs down there. It's pretty popular. When I was at a trade show in Memphis, there was a lot of guys showing me pictures of, you know, those types of dogs that they were hunting. I was like, dang, is that a thing down here? And they were like, oh yeah. I was like, that's wild.
Yeah, they kind of originated down in the South, and I think they have a pretty big following all over, but they're a little more niche up here.
Yeah,
but they're definitely around.
Do you hit like a hunt test circuit? Is there something like that in the PNW region?
For sure. I mean, there's a testing circuit, you know, basically March through September.
Yeah.
We're real fortunate that next year the AKC Master National is going to be in Roseburg.
Oh, yeah.
So they have a national test in the four regions across the country, East, Midwest, Central, and West. And so we're in the West. So it's going to be real close to us next year. But so we're real fortunate that national test is going to be in our neck of the woods. So we're going to be running some dogs there next year, hopefully.
Yeah, that'll be sweet.
Working the circuit hard, you know, Oregon, Washington, Idaho is kind of where we'll be running some tests next year.
Yeah.
Get pretty busy in the off season.
I bet, dude. How do you even find time to do that with training all the time? It's crazy.
That's what the weekends are for.
Yeah, exactly. Just nonstop dog action. That's crazy. Do you do that with your own dogs, or do you take training dogs there too?
Depends on what dogs I got at the time. And right now I've got a really great roster of clients that are, you know, really looking for perfection and chasing after getting some titles and, you know, really, really dedicated to their training. So we've been
100%
really rocking with some of those young dogs coming up, and we're excited for them next year to get in the circuit.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I feel like I'm on the opposite. What I wanted is just a dog that would hunt and retrieve and, personally, to me, you know, I wasn't interested in any testing or anything. I just needed like a meat dog, you know, just steady retrieve, come back, get my birds. And that's what I wanted. But I don't knock anybody, you know, doing the hunt test stuff either. I feel like it'd be, I could probably see myself doing that, you know, years down the road if I fade out on hunting a little bit. But I feel like, yeah, you have like your hunters and then your hunt tests, and probably a few people who do both. But it seems like it'd be something cool to do in the off season, honestly.
I mean, it's a blast. I mean, you're out there when the weather's nice and you get to actually, you know, I love the warm weather because I'm, you know, I'm spending more days outside in the rain than most people. And gosh, I mean, out here, we're going to start raining here soon. And it's not going to quit for a while. So, I mean, we definitely put our rain gear through its paces.
Yeah, big time.
But I mean, it's a great fun sport to get into. It's a great way in the off season to be active with your dog and just keep working those skills you're going to need in the hunting season. And, you know, really the best trained dog is a hunting dog, but
yeah,
not every hunting dog is very well trained.
Yeah.
I mean, you hunt with a dog that's really got some training, can go out and get any bird anywhere on the, you know, within sight. I mean, that really, we used to hunt this one field where there was this big irrigation, you know, a drainage ditch they cut through to get the water off the field, and you couldn't get through it. And so it's only about like, you know, 15 feet wide, but you can't walk through that sucker even if you got waders on. And so when we didn't have a dog, you got to walk like 2 miles down next bridge, get over that little dumb ditch to get your bird that's sitting like 10 feet on the other side of that piece of water, that little drainage ditch. And when you have a dog, I mean, that just saves your life. Not leaving, you know, it's pretty hard to leave a belly up bird that's, you know, 50 yards away out in the field.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely can't do that if you're hunting somebody's private stuff and you can't be leaving dead birds out on their field. But
100%.
When it saves you that, you know, 4 mile round trip slugging through the mud, you're like, oh man, I need this dog is a lifesaver right now. It's a really cool thing when you get them out there. If you want to ruin yourself as far as dogs go, you better not hunt with a master hunter, because you go out and hunt with a master hunter, you're going to be like, oh man, you mean I didn't have to go chase that sucker down? And it'll ruin you.
I could see that 100%. I remember kind of going back to some very basic stuff. I remember it was my, you know, Drifter was my first dog ever. And I remember you telling me to start slow with him. Like, don't bring him out on big hunts on their first hunts. You know, you'll burn them out. I remember you telling me that. So I didn't do that. I solo hunted him, you know, for 5 hunts straight. And then I did 3 people after that for 2 hunts. And then I kind of just staged up. I went solo hunt, 2 other shooters. And then I think the biggest one he hunted with was 6, and he did fine.
Yeah.
But I remember you saying that they can get burnt out, you know, pretty quick. If you just like pick them up fresh out of training and go shoot a 10 man hunt, like,
yeah,
what would be your tips on that?
I mean, if anybody's going into their first season, you got to remember that first season is really about the dogs. You're trying to connect dots for them. You're trying to encourage good habits that are going to hopefully last for you and that lifetime of that dog. And you don't want to go out there and, you know, you throw them to the fire and take them out on early goose and you cut into a, you know, 8 guys cut into a big flock. That's a lot of shots and a lot of birds falling. And sometimes that'll push, you know, you'll see a dog like Drifter get pushed over the edge and they become this psychotic maniac that is just, no matter how much training, they're just screaming their head off in the dog blind. They're breaking on you. No matter how much pressure you use, they're going to break the stake and pull it out of the mud. So it's really good to, you know, keep in mind that first season you're out with your dog, that season is really just about you and your dog and getting them ready. And, you know, you did it perfect where you really want to like feel out that water. What's he going to do when we're out hunting and I cut a couple shots off and some birds fall and he starts connecting the dots and he realizes those are going to be retrieves and those are ducks out there falling for him. That level of excitement is going to slowly grow. And, you know, as you get a feel for how your dog's doing, then you start kind of adding in piecemeal, you know, okay, let's go out. Or, you know what, we've been out on 10 hunts or 8 hunts or whatever, you know, there's a big flock coming. Let's just cut into him. I think he's ready. And then you slowly raise the bar on him. And if he has a setback, you just slowly step him back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you just do what your dog needs that first season so that you can be successful for many years to come, hopefully.
Yeah, I feel like that first one's kind of just getting them, you know, the foundation of the your seasons to come after that. Because I think his third hunt is when I saw that light bulb really click in him. Like, he was kind of just going through the motions the first two, and on that third one, it was like, okay, yeah, now he knows, like, he figured it out.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just game on. But it took him a couple. You know, I remember shooting the first widgeon, and he went and got it. I was like, okay, yeah, you got this. But it was like the third hunt, I saw that light bulb switch, and then it was just, like I said, it was just game on after that.
Yeah. I mean, you see those eyes of the sky, and they're like watching the birds work, and, you know, they're just sitting there knowing that it's coming. And, you know, that's a really cool experience that first time. But, you know, if you let your dog break the first time they go out, you might not get that.
Yep.
You might not get that experience.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I remember telling you at the mock hunt, like, his biggest downfall right now is like junky fields, because he's all eyesight and no nose. Like, he'll just run in circles and circles until he like gets right on top of him. I'm like, dude, you're 3 feet away from it. Like, just turn your nose on and just start sniffing a little bit. But like on those spud fields or those short grass fields where they're like very obvious, no problem at all. And if you put them in a, you know, like a silage cornfield, and the stalks are this tall and they're between the rows, it takes him a little while to know. You'll figure out if he didn't mark exactly where it was at, it'll take him a little bit. But other than that, he's been great. But it's just like, I feel like that just comes with experience, you know, just more and more hunting in different situations, and maybe it'll click eventually.
Absolutely.
For him.
I mean, you know, as he's maturing and getting older and getting into, you know, has experienced, you know, those cut cornfields or, you know, standing barley is a tough one for dogs to find the birds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really start to use all those resources when they're getting more experience. They know when to turn it on and turn it off. And I mean, those standing barley fields that the state has are just impossible to find a bird if you got to find that by yourself. I mean, that's like,
yeah,
you know, you step on it, you don't even know it. And,
exactly. I mean,
they're brutal.
They are freaking gnarly. Kind of winding down here, Colin. Well, to end it off, what would just be your top three tips on dog training?
I mean, I think I would, you know, for hunting, I would definitely recommend everybody try to get your dog used to using a dog blind. It's such a diverse tool. You can use it, you know, whether you're hunting an A-frame or a traditional four-sided blind, or you're in layouts. It's a great way to give your dog a spot to hunt from. Great way to train them from it. I think a big one is don't try to never let them get that opportunity to break without some proper training in there. That's a, you know, once they start going and knowing that they can, they're going to sneak one in. That's always going to be in their mind. And I mean, I would say, you know, take your time with your dog. You know, anybody can do it. You got to have the information. You got to be a good consumer. Make sure you're getting those health checks. You really want to invest in your dog and make sure you're going to have a lot of years of hunting, a lot of years of training, and drop a lot of birds.
Heck yeah, dude. Well, I really appreciate the stuff you did with Drifter, because, I mean, I can't say enough. Do I recommend you to everybody around here? And he's been a phenomenal dog, and I know he's a little amped up and not super calm, but he's been great. Like, I can't say enough good things about him, because the training that you did was just amazing and exactly what I needed, you know, for what I was looking for. But appreciate you coming on, man, taking your night to talk about more dogs, even though you do it all dang.
My pleasure, man. I mean, you know, it's a passion for me. You know, I could choose to do something else if I wanted to, but this is, you know, really what I choose to do because I love it. And, you know, I was just talking with one of the kids this evening about who's starting up with me. You know, they say that, you know, if you find a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. It's really not true. Because if you find a job you love, you'll pretty much work every day of your life because you can't quit. And, you know, it's fun to have a passion and be able to share that with other people. And, you know, I love talking dogs. So it's been fun, man.
Perfect. Heck yeah, man. Well, I appreciate it. The website, CascadeRetrievers.com, and Cascade Retrievers on Instagram. Find them there. And thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right.